This is the Chamber Chat Podcast, the show dedicated to chamber professionals to spark ideas and to get actionable tips and strategies to better serve your members and community.
And now your hosts. Tomorrow is his birthday. He's my dad, Brandon Burton.
Welcome to Chamber Chat Podcast. You're joining us today for episode 109, where it is my goal here on the podcast to introduce you to people and ideas to help you better serve your chamber members and your community. Our guest for this episode is Matt Morrow from the Springfield Area Chamber in Missouri. And Matt is the president and CEO of the Springfield Area Chamber of Commerce. And prior to accepting his current position in 2014, Matt served nearly 14 years as CEO of Professional Trade Associations of Home Builders, 2 years leading the Greater Birmingham Association of Home Builders in Birmingham, Alabama, and 12 years leading the Home Builders Association of Greater Springfield, Missouri. Matt's earlier professional background was in radio broadcasting and small market management, news, and sports, and in public policy and politics with Senator John Ashcroft and the Missouri Republican Party. Matt's wife, Rachel, owns an independent consulting and market research firm, Morrow & Associates, and teaches communication at Southwest Baptist University. Together, they have 2 children, Annie and Alex. And as I have Matt with us on the podcast today, we're going to talk about an idea that many chamber professionals are familiar with, the idea that we're all stronger together as we work together. And we'll be, dive a little more deeper into this discussion right after we get back from this short break. Would you be interested in creating even more value from the processes that you're already doing on a daily basis? Swipit has been one of my sponsors for Chamber Chat from the beginning. Swipit provides credit card payment solutions that will save your chamber up to 40% on your processing fees, and Swipit can integrate your credit card processing seamlessly into your existing membership software. Swipit does not charge chambers to switch, and they will make switching simple. In addition to these savings, Swipit has an affinity program for Chambers of Commerce, so you can earn more non-dues revenue to support your budget. Learn more about Swipit by requesting your free cost savings analysis and become more profitable today by visiting chamberchatpodcast.com/CC, as in credit card. Again, that's chamberchatpodcast.com/CC, and you can join many other chambers as you begin swiping with Swipit. All right, Matt, we are back. Welcome to the show. And if you would, say hello to all the chamber champions out there listening and share something interesting about yourself so we can all get to know you a little better.
Brandon, thanks so much. It is great to be with our chamber friends, especially in this format. I think this is a lot of fun. I enjoy listening to your podcast. I learn a lot from peers who are in the profession, and grateful for the chance just to be with you today. You asked me to share something interesting about myself, and so I've been spending many days trying to think of something. I'll say this. You mentioned that I had a background in small market radio. One of the things that if you could go back in time and watch, you would see sort of our own little bitty version of WKRP, where you just try to make things look bigger than they really are on small market radio. So we had a great time. And the reason I wanted to do that is because growing up, I listened to St. Louis Cardinals baseball games on the radio, and Jack Buck and Mike Shannon were the voices that I knew as well as my own parents' voices almost. And so I just wanted to do that. And so in small market radio, if you can sell enough $15 ads, you can put just about anything on the radio. So I sold enough $15 ads to put football games on the radio. And that was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed it a lot. The other thing I might mention, but there are probably a number of people in this profession who could say the same thing. And that is that before I was an employee of this Chamber of Commerce as its president and CEO, that in the work that I did with home builders associations and in the U.S. Senate and otherwise, I was a member of this chamber. I was actually served a term even on the board of this chamber at one point and learned a ton in doing that. Of course, that by itself doesn't put someone in a position to do this kind of work. It's a different job being in the profession than it is to sit on that board. But I learned so much from my predecessor and from others by just observing and being involved. I never really dreamed that it would lead to this point, but I'm thankful that it has, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to be in this position.
Absolutely. I've learned that's a very common tactic to recruit, future chamber CEOs is to get them on the board and kind of rope them in. And so it's a
in retrospect, maybe I was too naive to understand, but I sure learned a lot.
they got you. So, well, tell us a little bit about the Springfield Area Chamber, just so we can all get a little more perspective as to where you're coming from in our discussion today, maybe size and budget and things like that.
Sure. Springfield, Missouri is one of only 39 Springfields in the U.S. Almost every state has one, but ours, we believe, is especially, the special one, the best one. Everybody probably would say the same thing of theirs, but Springfield, Missouri is in a metropolitan statistical area of just under 500,000 people. And that's a 5-county region that we serve. We actually serve as a part of a regional partnership, a 10-county region. This is one of many ideas that we've borrowed over the years from other chambers of commerce. This one came from our friends at the Boise Chamber of Commerce, building that regional partnership. But in essence, we our core business operation really draws from about a 3-5 county region. We have about 1,500 member companies as part of the Springfield Area Chamber of Commerce. And our staff team here is 25 of us. That's 20 full-time and 5 part-time in various capacities. And in normal times, we run at a budget of about $3.2 to $3.4 million. And we are not we don't have the CVB as part of this chamber. We actually, many years ago, the CVB was a part of the Chamber of Commerce. They are an independent entity now, working with the city, but we work in very close partnership. I sit on the board of the CVB and we do have the Economic Development Organization in the region. So we do, have a 501c3, the Springfield Business Development Corporation, that leads an economic development partnership to attract new business to the region and work with existing businesses to expand here instead of somewhere else.
All right. That paints a good picture for us. So as we get into our discussion today, we're titling this episode, The Wisdom of Crowds. And I'm sure you'll explain to us why we're titling this episode that way. But in case anyone listening hasn't noticed, we live in a very polarizing world right now, whether it be in politics or race or gender, whatever. I mean, any title you can put on somebody, there's going to be an opposite point of view, it seems like, anymore. So I think this topic is timely for the world we live in today. But why don't you share with us why the wisdom of crowds? What does that mean to you?
Well, like every good idea, I didn't come up with it. I borrowed it and stole it. It's a great book that I read. One of my very favorite books is called The Wisdom of Crowds. It's by James Surowiecki. He is a former staff writer for The New Yorker on economy, but basically the whole premise of it is around this idea that there are certain circumstances in which crowds can actually be remarkably wise. Other circumstances, which we see playing out frequently on television, where crowds can be the opposite of that. They can be mobs. They can be all kinds of other things. But I was always struck by this story that he tells at the very beginning of the book, and I'll share it with you just in brief if I can. But it's a great illustration of how it works. There's a story of a man by the name of Francis Galton, who it was 1906. At that time, he was an 85-year-old college professor in London. So he had been doing this for a long time, and he had made quite a name for himself as an expert in two fields: the fields of statistics and breeding science. So agriculture, breeding science; those were his two areas of expertise. And by this point in his life, he's 85, and he had come to believe that society, this was his belief, he had come to believe that societies mostly consisted of simple people. Even probably, depending on how he looked at him, maybe even not very intelligent people, but that only a few people really had the characteristics necessary to keep societies healthy. And his view, his belief was that only if power and control stayed in the hands of a select, well-bred few, that societies would remain healthy and strong. So one day, this guy who was carrying around this belief with him, one day in the fall of 1906, he visited an agriculture and livestock fair that was out in the country. He did this quite often. This particular one was the West England Fat Stock and Poultry Exhibition. And he was there to observe the effects of good breeding in livestock. But he also then became sort of distracted, fascinated by this sideshow that was going on as a part of the fair. In fact, almost everybody who was attending the fair was distracted by this sideshow. And it was a weight guessing game. They had a live ox on display, and everybody could come up and look at it. They could touch the ox. They could, you know, kind of measure, do whatever they want to do. But the idea here was that everybody was supposed to wager a guess as to what its final weight would be after it had been slaughtered and dressed. Okay. So at the end of the day, 800 people wagered a guess. There were some butchers and some farmers in the crowd, and they placed bets, so they would qualify as experts. But mostly, these 800 people were not experts. They were just in it for the game. They were just having fun. And so, you know, as you might imagine, this Francis Galton, whose expertise is in statistics and breeding science, is really fascinated by this. And after all the bets had been recorded, he asked if he could borrow the data that they gathered to start running some of his own statistical analysis. And so you can probably guess what his hypothesis was. He fully expected that certain experts would get very, very close to the right answer, and that the collective judgment of the rest of the uninformed masses would be wildly off base. So he ran a whole bunch of tests on this data, but ultimately the simplest test that he ran was just to run a simple average of the group. So, you know, take all the guesses, add them up, and divide by the number of people in the group. And the average guess was 1,197 pounds. And so you could think of this as the collective judgment of the crowd. If the crowd had been one person, it would have guessed that the ox weighs 1,197 pounds after processing. Well, after the ox had been slaughtered and dressed, its actual weight was 1,198 pounds.
Wow.
And 1 pound off the judgment of the crowd. So the collective wisdom of the crowd, again, was within 1 pound of being perfect. Now, here's what's interesting. Not a single participant guessed the right weight. In fact, not a single participant came as close as 1 pound, but the crowd did. And this is sort of the crux of this principle that Surowiecki writes about in his book, The Wisdom of Crowds. And that is that under the right circumstances, groups are remarkably intelligent and often are smarter than the smartest people in them. And so the circumstances are really important, right? So his four circumstances are, first, diversity of opinion. So each person should have private information, even if it's just an eccentric interpretation of the known facts, all right? But it should be private, should be their own opinion. Independence is kind of related to that. The people's opinions are not determined by the opinions of those around them. They're arrived at independently. And decentralization is a third point, which is that people are able to specialize and draw on local knowledge. And then for his purposes, there has to be some form of aggregation, some mechanism for turning all these private judgments into some collective decision. You have to be able to average it. You have to be able to measure it in some way. And so there are lots of examples of this in our culture. There's, you know, the stock markets, sports betting odds, Google searches kind of end up predicting what you're going to say based on what other people have, you know, what other people have searched for, what you're going to be searching for. And all of these things kind of typify that. And what you find are the crowds that are predictive, that have intelligence kind of coming out of them, are the ones that have those characteristics that he identified. And the flip side of that is a lot of crowds that we see, you know, trying to sort of assert one thing or another, end up in the most destructive crowds, are missing one or more of those characteristics. So maybe their opinions are not determined by them independently, but are in fact determined by the opinions of those around them. Or maybe people don't have their own sort of diverse information. They're just sort of gathering from one place or the other. And they're not maybe all able to draw on their own specific sources of information. So anyway, when those things start happening, the wisdom of a crowd breaks down, and sometimes you end up with mobs, or you end up with other kind of very destructive crowds. The thing that I found really fascinating about this, and that really struck a note with me in reading it, rereading it, it was a 2004 book, but I reread it about 5 years ago, is that chambers of commerce are potentially the home to really wise crowds, and they're one of the very few places where you actually can foster those same characteristics that make crowds wise. And so as chamber leaders, if we want our crowds to be wise, we have lots of crowds that we manage and work with. If we want our crowds to be wise, the best thing for us to do is to devote ourselves to fostering and protecting those characteristics that make crowds wise, and then just stand back and watch the magic happen. And there are several instances where we get to see that happen. And I've become a lot more mindful after rereading that book of really just focusing my attention less on outcomes and more on making sure that these characteristics of the crowd are there, and the outcomes tend to be pretty good.
That is pretty impressive. I mean, just the whole story about guessing the weight of the cow and everything. And I mean, it's a simple experiment when you can just look at averages and numbers and crunch the numbers to get that outcome. But then once you start factoring into opinions and worldviews, right, and policy and things of that nature, when you have people that have a very limited perspective and point of view, I guess what I'm getting at is, as you try to assemble a crowd at your chamber to extract this wisdom out of them, you can't really dictate what sources of information they get. And it's good to have that diversity for sure. But maybe you can help attract certain types of people, certain backgrounds. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on attracting people to that crowd? Are there certain areas that you want to make sure you get represented and covered, and sure, others? I don't want to say you want to exclude anybody, but what do you look for as you assemble that crowd?
Well, that's a great question. One of the big things, obviously, is you want to think about what the purpose or function of the group is. So you wouldn't assemble the crowd in precisely the same way as you're sort of thinking about board makeup, as you are thinking about, for example, a task force that that is making recommendations on public policy, or a business retention expansion network that you've built out, or whatever those, I mean, if you have a network for young professionals like we do, you know, your crowd needs to be diverse, but it's probably not going to involve a 48-year-old Chamber of Commerce president like me. So, you know, you have to figure out how you're going to manage that. But within those confines, you really pursue those dynamics that are part of what makes a crowd wise. So for us, what that means, and every chamber has a bunch of examples of this, whether they're thinking consciously about it or not. We have a public policy advisory group, and their job is to review potential policy positions for the chamber, whether that be our legislative agenda or other public policy positions or issues that we may or may not endorse on a ballot. Their job is to thoroughly review that and make a recommendation to our board about a position that the board, you know, may or may not take, but generally follows the recommendation of this committee, of this group. So it's really important how we put that committee together. One of the things I tell our team all the time is, if you know that at the end of the process, you're going to have an outcome that a lot of people are not going to be happy with, then you really better have a good process. You really better have a process that you can point to that people see as fair and as authentic. And so we mind the process really well. And one of the ways that we mind is to try to make sure that group, particularly if they're dealing with public policy issues and endorsements and things like that, that group is made up of people who are very definitely and very openly Republicans, Democrats, independents, people who maybe don't talk a lot about, but people who have supported different candidates for city council or school board, and who are just diverse. They have different opinions. So that's the very first thing. Each person has their own private information, even if it's on their only, you know, an eccentric interpretation of the known facts. They're not going to come at it from the same. So we start with people who we know don't see the world all the same way. Now, if you just take people who don't see the world all the same way and you throw them in a bucket together, you can have a disaster.
It sounds like a recipe for disaster.
So here's the beauty. In almost every context in our culture, it is a disaster. We get to see it play out on TV all the time, right? It's why networks don't actually have people who disagree with them anymore on their networks. They kind of tailor their. So we as consumers of news can go to whatever our preferred place is and hear what kind of makes our ears feel good. And that's what we listen to. But chambers of commerce are one of the very rare places where you can actually take people who are of these different views, put them in a room together with a shared purpose. So their outcome, their objective here is not to figure out whether somebody ought to be for Trump or Biden or whether somebody ought to be, you know, whatever that is. That's not their charge. Their charge is to evaluate from a business perspective key issues at the local level, sometimes state level, often state level too, but that have and what that impact is on business and whether we should be for or against those things based on clear criteria. So we start with a diverse group, which can be volatile, it can be all kinds of other things, but then we really try to foster those other characteristics. So we hope to, while we're picking not just their diverse political perspectives, but the people who have independence. So people whose opinions are not determined by the opinions of others around them. So that's really important because you can have a lot of people who, and I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but a lot of us, it's easy to fall into this trap where I have this political view or you have that political view. And really what we're doing mostly is we're sort of parroting the echo chamber that we live in. Okay. So we don't want people like that. We don't want people who just naturally parrot the echo chamber that they're in. What we're going for, if we're trying to build a wise crowd, is diversity of opinion, but also independence, so that the people who are coming to that, they may not agree with each other, probably, and they shouldn't actually agree with each other on all the politics and everything else, but that they are also independent people, that their opinions have not been determined just by the opinions of those around them, that they're independent minded. So we're very careful in that vetting process. And then there's this idea of decentralization. So we're also careful as we, you know, kind of make recommendations for who should be on those kinds of groups, that they're able to draw on their own specialized local knowledge. So they come from different industries. They come from different, you know, sectors of the economy. So they're gathering information and knowledge from places that's not all sort of originating from the same source. It's decentralized. Once we've done all of that, the other thing that we try to do is to, while we can't tell people what to think and shouldn't try to, honestly, what we do try to do is to get good resources in their hands. So if we get good resources in their hands that they might not naturally encounter otherwise about these issues, then we feel like if they're diverse in opinion, they're independent, they're decentralized, they're gonna evaluate that, they're gonna ask good questions, they're gonna get to good recommendations. So for us, that means a lot of, you know, if it's a valid issue, we try to really track down people who are advocates on both sides of that issue to come and make presentations and field questions so that they can better understand where everybody's coming from on that issue. If it's a part of a legislative agenda, we do briefing papers that really try very hard to outline the key arguments for and against. And in many cases, we think probably people are, and we've heard actually from people who are there, that they come to the meeting, they come to that gathering with a certain perspective, a certain background, a certain understanding and knowledge of issues. But then they get a chance to see the briefings that we put together. And depending on which part of the information they already came to the table with, they encounter new information and they sort of factor that in. It's part of what they have to evaluate. So again, ours is not right or left or pro or con. It's just sort of all the key arguments and facts from a business perspective that we're aware of, in favor or against the same topic or issue. So it's pretty thorough preparation. But the result is pretty cool to see, because we see people who develop a real respect for each other, even though they don't vote the same way, even though they don't agree with each other on everything, they develop a real respect for each other and they're able to make recommendations. Many of them are unanimous. Most of them, in fact, are unanimous recommendations when we get to the end, on positions on issues that are important to business. Some are not, you know, some don't end up that way, but they still, you know, they go through that process and they sort of have to live with each other for a while and come to a pretty good place. That, I believe, that respect comes when you work side by side, arm in arm with people who on some key, you know, things that are important to your community. That's one of the things I love about working in Chamber of Commerce. I don't think you get that very many other places, and I'm excited to be a part of it here. I think our team really gets energized by it too.
Absolutely. I am a huge fan of, I think of it as counseling together. You know, everybody comes with their different perspectives and being able to work towards a common goal. You know, the example you shared with the cow, there was an absolute right answer, you know,
right.
You're weighing its numbers, its math, and this is the outcome. This is the answer. Where when you get a group of individuals from diverse backgrounds and experiences, there's probably not one exact right answer, but if they're working towards a common goal and can listen and understand that everybody's, you know, background and experience adds value to that crowd, then I think they can really make some good headway. And I would even maybe even argue a little bit that this divisiveness that we see is very much on what we see on TV and social media.
Yep.
But even if you get with somebody that may, you may butt heads with on social media, you get in the same room with that person and there's a respect, there's decency, for the most part, I think people want to get along. They want to move the ball forward. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's pretty hard to turn someone into a caricature when you know them personally.
Yes.
It's easy to do it when you see them on TV or on social media. You can turn them into a really one-dimensional caricature of themselves.
Absolutely.
But hard to do it when you have to work with them.
Yeah. And I would love to see more people be able to serve on these kind of committees and crowds, as you say, to be able to gain that experience and see that perspective. And I think even, the top athletes in the world, the Michael Jordans had coaches, and they had coaches because they could see the world through a different lens, a different perspective, and could say, here's how your game is here, but from this perspective, you can make these tweaks and be better. And I think that happens in our communities too, is to lean on others as coaches and their experience and wisdom. So
absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I know we're starting to get a little short on time. So I wanted to, you've covered a lot of ground and a lot of great information, but for any chamber champions out there listening, what would be one tip or piece of advice that you would give them to help take their chamber up to the next level?
I think the thing that I would suggest, and this is a little easier said than done probably, but is just to try to remember that the strength of your chamber, the strength of your business community is in the people who are a part of that chamber. It's not in those of us, as much as we own it, own and take ownership in the work that we do every day. We're passionate about the work we do every day, but the 25 of us who work and get our paycheck here at the Chamber of Commerce have to constantly remind ourselves that even though we work day in and day out on this stuff, that the real power and the real wisdom of the crowd of a Chamber of Commerce comes from those 1500 companies and the many, many people, the thousands and thousands of people who work at and for those companies. And as we, so the best things that we can do is to really be very proactive about learning everything we can learn from them. A lot of chambers of commerce have a business retention expansion program as a part of their economic development program. We do too. That's a great example, again, of really trying to harness the wisdom of the crowd, trying to do that in a way that gives us better intelligence about what it looks like to serve members well. You mentioned that long ago, now more than 20 years ago, my background was in politics and in government. Like a lot of chambers, we still work with a lot of candidates on different things. We actually endorse and support candidates for school board and for city council here in Springfield. And so we work with candidates and train them. And one of the things that we tell people is you need to go out and you need to knock on doors. You go out and you knock on doors and introduce yourself to voters. What's going to happen is, one, it's just good for you because you're making those contacts and that helps sort of build your support. But the most valuable thing you're going to get out of it is you're going to hear from them over and over again, different people, their perspectives on issues and on topics and whatever's about. And what will happen is over time, the candidate will develop an intelligence about their own constituency, right? They didn't maybe even set out to do it, but just hearing it, asking questions, learning more from them, knowing from this neighbor to that neighbor to that neighbor, they're not all the same. They each kind of have their own perspective. The accumulation of that aggregates in the candidate into sort of an intelligence about their own constituency. And you don't get that really any other way. You can't get that by just running a lot of ads. You kind of need to knock on doors. That's how I view our BRE program, our business retention expansion, and every opportunity we can have as a chamber. And that's the thing I would encourage people is at least figuratively speaking, knock on a lot of doors. Get an opportunity to really intentionally put yourselves in front of those businesses, hear from them, hear their struggles, find out what it is that's getting in the way. Don't wait for them to come to you. Be proactive. And what we develop as chamber executives is sort of an internal intelligence about that constituency, the business community, as a result of that.
I love that, gaining that perspective. And that's a very good example of the politicians going and knocking on doors. And the more you humanize yourself and get to know your constituents, the more you're going to be able to relate to them and really be able to serve them better. So absolutely. Right. So I like to ask this question to everyone that I have on the podcast. You may know what's coming, but as we look to the future of chambers, how do you see their purpose going forward?
So I don't think the purpose changes. I think the purpose is consistent and has continued to be consistent for a long time. And I think we'll be into the future as well. I tell people here that our purpose, you know, in serving the needs of the business community is to, everything we do is about growing the economy, creating jobs, and expanding economic opportunity for everybody who lives here. That purpose is not going to change. That will continue to be as it has been. The function and the application of that, of the work that happens to advance that purpose is constantly evolving. It probably wasn't that long ago that I wouldn't have been able to imagine you and I doing a podcast many miles apart from one another and actually being able to watch each other while we do it because that's we're doing it over Zoom too, right? I mean, that's a totally different application of how you do it. And we have learned a lot in the last year about ways to deliver value. And in some cases, I think maybe, unprecedented value to the business community from chambers of commerce, but through vehicles and channels that we've never even really, many of us even explored very much before this year. And so I think that to me is an encouragement about the future of chambers. It's that we can adapt. We can make sure that there are creative and new ways to deliver value to the business community. And I'm encouraged by, probably like a lot of chambers, we saw pretty big hit to membership early in the year that we were really concerned about. In some ways, I was really thankful that when the pandemic first hit, it was fairly early in the calendar year for us, which is our fiscal year, because it gave us the luxury of just working with a lot of members and pushing their renewals way off and being able to do some things like that. And so we saw, and probably some others did too, a big surge in membership renewals at the last quarter of the year. In fact, by the end of the year, we were well up over 90% in retention for the full year. And that was not where we were at the end of September. I can tell you that we were not there, but we had pushed a lot of it off. Anyway, my point is just to say we did a lot of things like many others did in terms of outreach and serving the needs of business. If ever there was a time where there's a good excuse to not renew your chamber membership, it would have been for a business at the end of 2020, but that's not what we saw. And I think a lot of chambers probably saw something similar to that. And it's a direct result of people buying what you're doing. They're buying your service of mission. So the more we can make everything we do about mission and communicate that effectively and well and in new and dynamic and creative ways, I think the future for chambers of commerce is really, really bright.
Absolutely. Well said. Well, Matt, I appreciate you spending time with us today on Chamber Chat Podcast. I love the examples that you shared, and I'll put a link to the book, The Wisdom of Crowds, in our show notes for this episode as well. So if anybody wants to check that out, it's obviously made a big impact on Matt's life. But for anyone listening, if they would like to connect with you or continue this discussion offline, what might be the best way for them to reach out and connect?
Well, you, of course, can reach out to me at springfieldchamber.com. Of course, that's our website. springfieldchamber.com has all of our contact information for the chamber. You can also, I'm on Twitter. You can reach me at Matt_Morrow on Twitter. That's at MATT_MORROW. Sometimes people want to spell that MARROW, but you won't find me on Twitter that way. It doesn't bother me, but you won't find me on Twitter that way. So Matt_Morrow on Twitter, and you can always email me too, Matt@springfieldchamber.com.
All right. And I will update that in our show notes for this episode as well, all that will be found at chamberchatpodcast.com/episode 109. But again, Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. Great conversation and great examples. Thank you so
much.
Brandon,
thanks so much for the invite. It's a pleasure to be with you.
If you are a chamber professional, please subscribe to Chamber Chat Podcast in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. When you subscribe to Chamber Chat Podcast, new episodes will show up in your podcast app each week as they are released. If you're finding value in this podcast, please leave us a rating and a review in iTunes. But most importantly, please share Chamber Chat Podcast with your colleagues that are in the industry. As a podcast listener and as a chamber leader, have you considered the benefits that podcasting could have for your chamber? This is what I like to call the podcast pivot. If you're like many chambers, you're always looking for ways to provide non-involvement value to your member investors. Many chambers are finding that podcasting is a great solution. A podcast platform becomes a media arm for your organization that builds trust in your community, tells the stories about your members as well as your advocacy efforts, and becomes a valuable, tangible asset for non-dues revenue. If you'd like to see if podcasting is a good fit for your chamber, visit chamberchatpodcast.com/pivot to learn more and to gain access to our free chamber podcasting guide. Again, this is found at chamberchatpodcast.com/pivot.